You are listening to the Horse Radio Network, part of the Equine Network family.
Welcome to the My Senior Horse Podcast. This is where people who own, manage, and love senior horses, ponies, donkeys, and mules can come to share our passion and to learn more about caring for our senior equids. We are in the third of a three-part podcast series on managing senior horses and herds with Drs. Pat Harris and Nikki Jarvis, both equine veterinarians. I'm your host, Kim Brown, editorial director of My Senior Horse. We launched the My Senior Horse global brand in partnership with Linda Mars and Mars Horse Care in mid-2024. We offer many ways to get information on older equids, including this biweekly podcast, articles on myseniorhorse.com, and videos, and so much more. One of our speakers today is Dr. Jarvis, who is head of veterinary care at Red Wings Horse Sanctuary in Norfolk, England. She qualified from the Royal Veterinary College, London, in 1990 and worked in mixed practice for 2 years before moving to Newmarket, where she completed a two-year internship at Rossdale's Equine Hospital. Dr. Jarvis then joined Red Wings Horse Sanctuary in Norfolk in 1996. She is now head of veterinary care there, working with what she calls an incredible team of veterinary surgeons and nurses to care for more than 1,200 resident horses, ponies, donkeys, and mules. Dr. Jarvis attained her RCDS Certificate of Advanced Veterinary Practice in Equine Medicine in 2012 and her Cert AVP in Equine Surgery Soft Tissue in 2013. She has a keen interest in equine nutrition, geriatric medicine, internal medicine, and colic. Dr. Harris is a past president of the British Equine Veterinary Association and is a European specialist in veterinary and comparative nutrition. She is the Equine Nutrition and Science Advisor to Mars Horse Care and Waltham Equine Studies Group, Waltham Pet Care Science Institute. Harris has spent much of the last 30 years working to help improve the care and nutrition of older horses. She also is passionate about seniors because of her dedication to her own older horses. Harris has advised on the care and many senior equids and has authored numerous articles on their care. Her involvement in several global senior research teams gives her special insight into some of these studies. Dr. Harris is also on the Executive Advisory Council for My Senior Horse. Thank you for joining us today, Drs. Jarvis and Harris.
Thank you so much for the invitation. It's a real delight to be here today with you, Kim and Pat. We always have very good fireside style natters and cover lots of subjects. So I'm really looking forward to today.
Yes, and I would say it's just so good to have a little bit more time to expand and to be able to pick Nikki's brains because of her experience of managing these large groups, in particular of senior horses. So we always love it. And as you've said, Kim, we are both so passionate. So we really love the opportunity to share with those that are listening, but also to encourage, if you have any questions, to try and let us know of the areas you'd like us to cover, because we can only give very general advice, but we love the opportunity.
Well, thank you for that, Dr. Harris and Dr. Jarvis. And I want to tell our listeners, in part one of the series, we talked about having senior horses, ponies, donkeys, and mules as part of a mixed age herd and kind of how to balance the behavior and observe your horses and make sure that they are happy as well as healthy. And then in part two, we focused in about the nutrition of senior equids in a herd setting. So today we want to focus on herds of senior only equids, which can include the horses, ponies, donkeys, and mules. And we really want to let Dr. Jarvis tell us a little bit about her experience at Red Wings. So can you describe some of the senior-only herds and oh my gosh, the exquisite management that goes in that you have at Red Wings Horse Sanctuary?
Absolutely. It'd be a pleasure to. So we're very blessed at Red Wings in that we do have a wide variety of facilities, and I think that is important. So our main management is on pasture. And so during the summer months, we have plenty of grass. In fact, that can prove a challenge because you, as we all know, you can have too much grass. And then during the winter months, they also remain out on pasture. They do have what we would refer to as summer fields and winter fields for each group, because the winter fields tend to have enhanced facilities. So they would have a nice area of hard standing. So it would be like a concrete or a tarmac pad outside a generous sort of field shelter. And then we can have things like, if they're horses on forage, you can have hay rings. Or obviously with youngster groups, we sometimes have to change what the hay is served in, because, you know, certain horses like to injure themselves and climb in things more than others. And you've got to make sure also with hay rings, if you've got a variety of sizes of horses within a group, that everyone can safely access the forage. You know, it's no good having things out of reach or water tanks or feeders that horses can't reach. So it's really critical to think of that when you're blending group sizes together. So as I say, most of the winter fields will have these areas of concrete hard standing that offer us a real advantage, I think, for the older horses who don't want to be wading through mud. And if they've got things, conditions like PPID, they might be more prone to pest and dermatitis. If they're an older horse, they might have osteoarthritis. So there's all sorts of reasons why many of these older horses spend quite a lot of time standing in the area of the hard pad and the shelters. So we have got nice facilities. The other thing we're blessed with is wood chip. So wood chip obviously is quite a wonderful thing if you're managing groups of older horses. So they wouldn't spend their whole time on there, but it's very, very useful for things like weight management. A horse that's maybe been in veterinary care for laminitis and is recovering, or maybe an older horse that's had to come into vet care for another reason, but has low-grade osteoarthritis. So if he's confined to a box for 3 or 4 months, they're going to potentially seize up. So again, sometimes managing that horse where it can freely move around and ambulate is really good for the horse's mental health, and often really good to keep those old limbs moving nicely, to keep their muscles moving, because obviously that's really important. So we are blessed that we've got wood chip facilities available as well. And we've also
I'm going to interrupt just a second to say, for our listeners, we were fortunate enough to send a video team over to Red Wings, and we have some videos that can show some of these facilities. And one of them was these wood chip paddocks. So make sure to go to myseniorhorse.com and look under the videos tab, and you can find some of these videos from Red Wings. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Dr. Jarvis.
No, don't say sorry at all. That's such a good point. And so anyone who heads to that can see me being just as loud and enthusiastic about wood chip areas as I'm being right now, because they're also very useful in winter if you've got things like an older horse that's struggling with things like pest and dermatitis, because again, that way you can get them onto a lovely surface where they're more likely to heal better. And again, if it's a horse you don't particularly want to have in a box for an extended period of time, so it can work incredibly well. So we're very blessed with the facilities we've got for managing groups of older horses. As regards the sort of pasture management itself, we do use sort of tape systems to sort of help manage the amount of grazing they have access to.
So and in America, this would be those tape electric fences that we use a lot.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. So that's a good point, because, we do use different terminology, don't we, for certain things. So, sort of rugging horses and blanketing horses. So thank you, Kim. So that makes it quite easy to manage the older horse. We do have to be respectful to friendship groups. And that sometimes means we can't have this pure old horse only group, because if there is a strong friendship bond, particularly if horses have been rescued together and there's this really strong friendship bond, we work very hard not to just divide groups up solely because we go, actually, you fit into group B and you fit into group C. I'm sorry, you've been friends. You're going to be separated. No, we wouldn't do that. It would only be if a clinical scenario happens whereby there was a genuine risk to that horse's welfare if you were to continue to try and manage them together. So it's very rare we would divide them up. We would try and work to find solutions to the problem. For example, if one horse needs an extra feed and the other one doesn't, we would feed them separately in the corral, on the field, or in the shelter, etc., and try and work together. I know you were interested to hear how often horses move between groups. That, and again, surprisingly seldom. I think the one major time it would happen is if we had a horse, an older horse with very, very failing dentition that was suffering from episodes of colic and choke, where we deemed simply that horse couldn't be around forage, you know, long fibre forage such as hay and haylage any longer. We would then potentially look to relocate them to a group of fellow, what we call no long fibre ponies. Now, again, we're very blessed. We have several groups of no long fibre ponies, so we can at least match and find a really good friend. And usually it's possible that if we've got that older horse within veterinary care, perhaps undergoing treatment for a dental condition or another sort of age-related condition, there's probably another one also in vet care from a no long fibre group. So we can start by housing them in houses next to each other and build up a relationship in that manner. So it's because I think with the older horse, it's important you treat them from a veterinary point of view. Of course it is. But their mental health and well-being is critical. It's critical in these older horses. I really believe it is. And I've seen horses that have lost companions where literally they won't eat, they barely sleep. And so I think you've got to think long and hard before you radically divide up a bonded pair.
And Dr. Harris, do you have anything that you would like to add as we're getting started on this?
As Nikki was speaking, some horses actually will eat better if there's another horse around, but other horses actually eat better when they're not, because otherwise they're too on edge. It's always better, and if they've got a companion, yes, having that at the companion. But again, they're very individual, and some animals really don't want other horses. And it's the same as Nikki mentioned about being in vet. And I think with our older horses, the same as our competition horses, there may be periods when they have to go into a little period of box rest for whatever reason. And I think that's where, in particular, we need to think how to manage the older horses. There may be a bonding, so we need to think about that. But again, some of the older horses, they want to be in a busy yard. Some of them don't. Some of them are actually very, very stressed by being everything going around. They're used to being out in that field where they can hide with their mates in a corner and just move around. And suddenly they're in this yard where there's noise and there's people and everything's going on and strange horses are moving. So I think for people, it's worth talking to your vets and thinking about the individual and where to house them in if you have a choice in the yard. What can you give to occupy their time if they are on their own? What do you need to do with their food? If they were on a certain feed that was providing additional calories, now they're not moving around, do you need to reduce that? How do you do that by and still keeping that fibre? And so I think that whole, how do you manage if they have to move from where they're being comfortable to for even a short period, does need thinking about. And I also, Nikki was saying about being on the field and having all the hay around and everything. We've talked in one of the others, you need to think about whether you need to put a net over it if some of the horses have asthma so they can't get their heads right in. What about, do you need to use a slow feeder net? But be aware you need to allow access and that feed, because again, we've talked before, if it gets muddy around that feeder, is that a problem for the individual animal? Also, in particular, if you're restricting resources and the hay runs out and you then give them another feed, there may be more aggression. If, however, you sometimes, you know, you're giving them and they don't run out, it's easier. So you need to look with that group. Are you best to put all the hay in on one occasion with a slow feeder hay net over it? And that works better than you filling the feeder up three times a day, but they never have a chance to ever get a full stomach, whatever. And there are, you know, you group dynamics on feeding is depends also on resource protection, the individual animals, what happens. So we're getting back again to our monitoring and adapting to your group of horses. But just listening to what we're saying, think of some things, watch the horse and think, how could I adapt it? Yeah.
Mars Equestrian, a sponsorship division of Mars Incorporated, is dedicated to highlighting the Mars brands, such as Buckeye Nutrition, Spillers, Antec Diagnostics, Sound Imaging, Royal Canin, Pedigree, Nutro, and many more in the equestrian world. Whether it's through nutrition, veterinary care, or education, our purpose is to create a better world for horses, pets, and the people who love them.
Dr. Jarvis, I know that in the rescue situation, it's you're not out there buying a horse. You are getting what you're getting. So do you find when you get seniors in that they seem to have been handled more and are more adaptable to situations? Or because they've been used to kind of fending for themselves, do they particularly, you have to do some special behavior work with them?
That's a really brilliant question. And I'm going to be able to give you almost every answer under the sun, if I'm entirely honest, Kim, because we have a wide range of rescue intakes, and they range everything from the horse that was roaming almost, you know, feral, perhaps on the moors or the commons, so you would have had relatively little human interaction. And then regardless of their age, they are just not used to human interaction. And as Pat mentioned earlier, even in the sort of owned horse concept, you can just get horses that are just used to being minimal handling, but they and they have to be with a herd environment. That's where their safety is. That's where their security is. So obviously, when they come into the sanctuary, very often they are still within part of a herd, you know, when it's a larger group. And we are very blessed. We have specialist welfare and behaviour department and specialist behaviour and handling teams who work with those horses one-on-one to see what level they're at. Now, sometimes horses will surprise you. They're horses that have had minimal human contact, but they will take to it like a duck to water. And there are other horses whereby even with extensive and I'd like to say very expert handling and behavioural work from our teams, because the teams are highly experienced, then there's only a certain minimal level you can get to. It isn't that you couldn't do more with the horse, but if you tried, you're going to just cause it so much stress that you have to think, what do I actually realistically need to do? Because this horse doesn't have to, be backed or have someone ride him. This horse doesn't have to go out to a guardian home. We try wherever we can with our beautiful horses, but equally we are a sanctuary, so horses can stay there for the rest of their life if that is the right thing for that horse to do. So the teams that work with them handling wise, they actually find it's the full range of ages. So you may have a horse come in and perhaps that horse has lived in pure isolation on its own for many, many years, and it's quite aged and it's had minimal veterinary intervention or care. And also it's had no socialisation from other horses. So that horse hasn't even got the protection of having a herd with it. It's lived on its own. So everything can be quite a big culture shock when the horse comes in. But we are blessed. Those teams will work really hard to find a group it can join, a group it feels comfortable with, and get it to a stage where we can complete all of the necessary veterinary treatment we need to do to keep it safe, to keep it well, but equally not to put any undue stress on the horse. And obviously all of the handling that is done is very much done using the correct learning theory and humane techniques. and positive negative reinforcement, and yeah, and all done at the horse's pace, very importantly. Yeah, they all do it at the horse's pace. So I'm very blessed. They quite regularly hold training sessions. So we get to learn the bits that we can do at our level, not obviously the handling they do, but it's quite quickly they've taught me basically any interaction I have with a horse actually has taught that horse something. And sometimes you're teaching them something you don't mean to, because you just don't know, you've reacted in some way and that's had an impact on the horse. So yeah, it's equine behavior is incredibly important at Red Wings. Equally, we'll have other new intakes come in, older horses, and they've seen it all, done it all, know it all, and yeah, they absolutely they come in. And we've even had some older horses go out to guardian homes, you know, because sometimes there's been a need for a companion for someone else's older pony, and obviously they don't want to have an absolute youngster. So sometimes, yeah, our older horses are really well established and cope really well in guardian homes.
Well, and that brings up a couple of questions. I'm going to stay with Dr. Jarvis here for just a moment. Is one, yes, you do, and people around the world, there are rescues and sanctuaries around the world that you can go work with, and we're just happening to talking to Dr. Jarvis at Red Wings today. But when you're trying to find a guardian home for one of your animals, you know, what does that look like and what can people expect? And also, when we're talking behavior, I have a gal that I work with who's an expert in asses, mules and donkeys, and especially in mules. And she's reminded me that we have mules. She said, every time you go up to a mule, it's a new introduction. You can't just, even though you've been around this mule for years, there is a social acceptable way to do this. So, I mean, people who haven't had mules and donkeys, oh, aren't they great? I love my mini donkey. I wouldn't trade her for a truckload of gold, but she's different and they have different personalities. So I've asked you kind of a double question here is one, you know, how do you look for someone that would be a good fit, and how would people look for the right animal? Because I know in the U.S., a lot of people have decided they want donkeys to go along with their hunter jumpers or something. And it's really cute, but the donkey, I'm not sure it's the best thing for the donkeys, though.
So at Red Wings, whilst we do have donkeys and we do have some mules and the occasional hinny, we actually focus on rehoming of horses and ponies. So our population of the others are relatively small. And I think the majority of our mules, because they're quite settled in the groups they're in, so we don't have many of them. They're very settled in the groups they're in. And I think if rehoming them wouldn't be the right thing for the mule. So we are blessed in that we can look at it more, what would be the right thing for that animal. And then also, I know that there are several organisations in the UK that do rehome donkeys. And I think they're always quite keen that they're rehomed in pairs because of the special pair bond. So I think there are some unique characteristics, you're absolutely right, of the donkey and the mule versus the horse and the pony. So if somebody was to come to us and had seen one of our horses and ponies, so when they are ready to be considered for rehoming, it's not quite like a dating site, but they do appear on our Red Wings website. We tend to rehome in locations where it is possible for us to then easily do a home check, because we do find that people really like it if we check in with them while they have the pony in their care, because it gives them a great opportunity to obviously ask any questions and to know that there is the link there. So we do tend to home more locally to our various centres across the UK. And obviously that person, if they were interested, would in the first instance apply, would make sure that they had the right facilities. And if they were taking on a single pony, we would make sure that there was going to be another friend for it when it reached its destination and how well they would be matched. And then, yeah, they'd come up to see us and come and meet the pony. And if it was a ridden one, have a trial with us and then take it from there. Our rehoming teams, obviously, they are really skilled in helping match guardians and ponies, because the most important thing is we want a happy pony and we want a happy guardian. So, yeah, a lot of time and effort goes into making the perfect match. So perhaps if they could organise my dating life, that would help. I don't know. Yeah, maybe.
And of course, when we're talking about seniors, you know, there are health conditions that go along with that. PPID, the ID, the metabolic syndromes, the physical issues of arthritis and previous injuries. But I want to talk a little bit about exercise of our seniors. Is there something that, I mean, yes, we know that there are seniors that compete in the Olympics, but that's kind of our everyday. They may be a trail horse or a grandkid or a kid's horse, or, you know, just do light work around that, what we're doing with them. So what are some of the general health tips that you would have for seniors in a herd?
So I'm going to definitely, if I may, bring Pat in as well, who's got some, obviously has got a great deal of expertise and nutritional input to some of the things I'm going to say. So at Red Wings, if a horse is with us, it's not undergoing an exercise program at the time. So it would only be if a horse was a suitable one to move into rehoming, and if it was suitable to be a ridden candidate, would we then sort of bring it under the wing of seeing, bringing it onto an exercise program and obviously bringing that horse under saddle. So for the rest of ours in the field, they are literally within the field. So their main exercise is ensuring they've got sufficient paddock space and room, because obviously you need to use it or you'll lose it. I think they apply that to humans as well. So with these older horses, the majority of them, we don't want to stand them in small environments for any longer than is necessary. We like it when they're out and about. And it doesn't matter your age. We frequently walk past the fields and they'll just be having a good old gallop just for fun. And it's important that they've got the room to do that wherever possible. And as mentioned earlier, we always endeavour when we bring them into veterinary care to, provided the condition isn't going to be impacted by movement, we find them the largest amount of room we can get them, either a wood chip area or one of the largest stables, because again, when you bring an older horse into veterinary care, particularly if it's got conditions like osteoarthritis, you've got to bear in mind that horse has got to feel safe and comfortable to lie down if it wants to. And certainly first few days they come in under vet care, many of them won't lie down because they're unsettled, it's a new space. They haven't got the protection of the herd around them for security, and they will be on watch and they won't lie down. But if they're in longer term vet care, often they do like a lie down. So it's making sure they've got sufficient bedding and sufficient room so to hopefully avoid them becoming cast in the stable, because older horses may take several attempts to stand. You know, you don't see them at night. You don't often see them lie down and get up. So we don't all know how easily they get up unless they're having sort of regular checks on there. And then other forms of exercise, to be fair, obviously exercise, I'd just like to go into the fact of older horses with insulin dysregulation. And if Pat's happy to expand further upon this, but obviously, provided the horse hasn't got an active attack of laminitis, provided it's, you know, very comfortable and has recovered, low grade exercise can be very useful for insulin dysregulation. It can definitely help. And also can, you know, exercise programs can form part of a weight loss program. So I don't know if Pat's got any further thoughts.
Yes, just picking up on that, I think we've done some work to show that even a short period of trot a day can really help to support a reduction in insulin resistance or improvement in insulin sensitivity. And I agree with all your caveats. If the horse is able, and this is in a home environment, if you've got one of your horses, it's good for everybody to to do some exercise and to be able to go with a horse. And if their companion can come along as well, that's all great, because then we avoid all the bonding separation issues. But if they are insulin dysregulated and they've had previous laminitis, then if we can get exercise, we've also shown that the number of hours trotting in a week has an influence on insulin response as well. So it's exercise is really important if you can, but some animals you can't because of osteoarthritis and other reasons. So I think we have to work what's right for the individual, but definitely exercise. I think the other thing is really, if you need to think though, in a young animal, and in particular some young growing animals, we often want a slight incline in our field because it's actually good for their bones and joints to have that. But with our older animals, we're often trying not to have that. So we're trying to find fields where the hill is more flat. We've mentioned before where we try and avoid too much mud. We try and see if there's a way to put where their water, either move the water or have a concrete pad around the water. The same as feeding stations. Can you either move that, or can you have some way that it's still solid? Because it's so important, all of that. I think those were really the ones that I wanted to add. I think PPID, because you need to monitoring it, and Nikki, you've mentioned before in the first one that PPID animals may have more resistance to treatments to try and manage worm burden, so you need to check them more often. Your PPID, you need to, and your older horse, we need to doing their teeth, they should be checked more often. I think your monitoring of health status, you know, checking, you know, what's happening, are they developing any equine asthma, that will really, really help you, and then you can adapt to those clinical. Older horses seem to have, and we mentioned before, muscle atrophy, so doing some muscle atrophy scoring. Now, if they have that, again, I mentioned previously, we want to think about their protein intake and the quality of the protein intake in any senior horse. But in particular, they're starting to lose some muscle. A bit of exercise is not just for that insulin dysregulation, but it might really help. We need a lot more evidence, but the same in humans, it seems that a bit of exercise can help in some cases where there's not a pathological reason for that muscle loss. And I think that comes again to there. Some of them do have a pathological reason, and maybe that means you need an orthopedic evaluation. They may be lame and they're starting to get muscle atrophy on one side. If we can deal with that, and if we can manage their osteoarthritis to remove the pain in that limb, then you've got an animal who can move more easily, they can graze more easily, they can live more comfortably. So I think sometimes pain management can be beneficial to the horse, but first you need to recognize there is some pain around. And finally, on pain, pain in the teeth and pain elsewhere may increase the risk of ulcers, we believe, or at least prevent improvement. So I think this whole thing about the health is really important, because it affects what you're feeding and how you manage and whether there is a veterinary intervention. But the veterinary intervention may help these older horses to live a more comfortable life. And Nikki, I know you have thoughts on that.
I think for me, definitely, a lot of what you've said is really key, because thinking about osteoarthritis and not wishing to drag across from a different species, but in humans, if you've got low-grade osteoarthritis in the joint, one of the key things the physios are eager that you do is maintain your muscle mass around that joint, so that you're preventing any joint laxity, any abnormal weight loading through it. So I think it is important to think about maintaining muscle mass and ensuring you've got appropriate pain relief. I think very much so. And as we've touched on in one of the earlier podcasts, also keeping that body condition score ideal, because the overweight horse is going to put so much extra weight loading, you know, through the joints. And obviously there is the theory that obesity leads to a chronic inflammatory state that can exacerbate these sorts of diseases. One thing I thought was might be of interest to the audience, so keeping older horses in a group. So we have a little herd of horses at one of our farms, and each one of those horses is very aged, and they have multiple issues that are all fortunately being managed. So they're all a cheerful bunch, but they have insulin dysregulation. So we know from blood testing that they have very high exaggerated insulin response to exposure to grass for a particular period of time. So as they all got on, and as they're all a friendly bunch, we've sort of grouped them together, thinking that obviously that would make it so much easier to manage the insulin dysregulation. And although it's overall working well, I have to say I'd like to reiterate the individual. You can take a group of horses and you can put them under a particular management that should work for all. And I've got horses whose insulin has reacted absolutely beautifully. And other horses that, honestly, you can expose them to the same amount of time to a small area of very mature grass that should be relatively safe and has proven okay in the others, but that will have an extreme insulin response. So although logically putting groups together, it doesn't always work as smoothly as you'd think, because individuals are individuals, and that's as simple as it is. So it comes back to approaching every horse and treating their insulin dysregulation slightly differently. The overall theory is easy, because you're saying, right, I want everybody at optimal body condition score. We've got to be careful to ensure they don't become overweight. We're not going to expose them to high starches, high sugars. We're choosing a forage throughout the winter that we know to be low in water soluble carbohydrates, and we're careful on that front. But I am still finding very different reactions with a couple of those horses.
And Nikki, I can 100% all the studies, we're doing a lot of work on how best to feed these IDs, and it's individual. Some horses you take and put on a dry lot, immediately insulin goes down, others they stay up. You do. And I think what is lovely, Kim, is to hear Nikki from a sanctuary that has 1,200 animals talking about looking at the individual. And I think that is a marvellous way, and a way to finish this is that it's, you have to look at the individual, you have to monitor them and not assume they've either read the textbook or understood what you're trying to achieve. We have to get that. We have to look at them. And Nikki, I think that is wonderful that you still consider them all as individuals, which is brilliant.
Thank you, Pat. That's lovely. I'll make sure that goes back to the teams, because, yeah, there's a lot of people there that work exceptionally hard. So thank you very much. I'll pass that back.
Well, Dr. Jarvis and Dr. Harris, I cannot thank you enough for taking the time to share all of this great information and stories and research with our audience in this three-part podcast series. And for our listeners, make sure you go back and listen to the first two podcasts. They were wonderful. And it's very easy to find them. You go to myseniorhorse.com. At the very top of the page, it says podcasts. And you can go down and find this three-part series and listen to them there. Or you can listen to them on your favorite podcast network under My Senior Horse Podcast. And we encourage you to please sign up for our weekly newsletter so that you know the information that's coming out on My Senior Horse. And if you have any comments or suggestions about senior horses, ponies, donkeys, or mules that you would like to have discussed on this podcast or delved into in content of My Senior Horse, send an email to me at kbrown, that's the letter kbrown, at equinenetwork.com. Thanks for joining us today. Take care of yourselves and your senior equids. And thank you so much, Dr. Harris and Dr. Jarvis.
Thank you, Kim, and thank you, My Senior Horse. And as ever, absolutely lovely to spend this time with you too, Pat.
Thanks. And yeah, thanks, Kim, for My Senior Horse, for putting this on and, you know, for taking the time to dedicate a whole area onto the senior horse. Thank you.
Bye, everyone. Talk to you soon.